Hi everyone, I'm Alice, married to Chris, and we're the pastors here. We're doing a series on the local church is the hope of the world. So the local church is an ingenious idea. As this famous beer advert said, slightly corrupting it, it can reach the parts that no one and nothing else can reach. Is anyone old enough to know that one? actually, that's bad advertising, isn't it? Because I can't actually remember the brand. I only remember the phrase. Oh, my gosh. Take it back. Good advertising. Just some things aren't in my radar. So I'm not talking about the church that we all hate, obviously, the divisive, judgmental, hypocritic institution that some people have called the church. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about a nimble, powerful, loving, kind, loved ninja army that follows the organic move of the Spirit and changes the world wherever it goes, one heart and one family and community at a time, where people enjoy life, they share their love, their stories, their power, their possessions, their wealth, their homes generously and liberally and full of hope because they live in and for a story that lives forever. I'm talking about communities where everyone gets to play, everyone gets up in the morning with a reason to get out of bed, everyone is looked after, and everyone lives their dreams. And I'm talking about historical movement, actually, as well, of people, of these communities of such love that they exploded across the Roman Empire and did things that no one else was doing at the time. They took in babies, they made hospices for the dying and healing places for the sick out of these worship centres for God. Powerful people that closer to home saw societal and cultural and personal injustices that so violated their consciences that they made changes to the way we operated. People who paid a price one day in seven because they saw that there were children being mobilised for the Industrial Revolution, and they were just really useful in factories to work a very long time. They weren't valued culturally, so they were just useful ways for personal financial advancement in that shock season of factories work. We can do things through factories. We're in the middle of one now, technological revolution, and there's all sorts of fallout and abuse in terms of the stewardship of children, which we will and are realigning. But in the Industrial Revolution, with some people that thought, actually, let's stop exploiting children and start stewarding them. So on their one day off on Sunday, they started school called Sunday School, where they taught them to read and write and Bible and invested in them. That was a seed that started to take root in people's minds. They started to think, maybe we could do this Monday to Friday. And so it began to grow and grow and became this idea that maybe we could offer every child that lives on this shores access to free primary and secondary education from the age of five. And then that idea grew and grew till now it's in the United Nations global rights of a child, their charter, that every child should receive an education that enables children to fulfill their potential. There was one vicar and one woman 200 or 300 years ago that just went, that's not right. I'm going to sow a seed and just teach some children here. And it just absolutely exploded. They gave, and they paid a price. That boy paid a price when he gave us 5 loaves and 2 fish because that was his whole lunch and he was hungry, but he gave it and he received back an enormous amount because it said that everyone in the feeding of the 5,000 was full beyond satisfied. So he paid a price, he got his own reward, but thousands of people were fed too. So we think, what are our 5 loaves and 2 fish? Then another movement that just saw slave trading across the British Empire again had incredible financial justifications, but they just couldn't live with that. Just that status quo didn't sit right anymore. So they defied their own countrymen, often accused of being traitors and so on, to contend for just and honouring laws to anyone in employment, and broke the back of that industry. A movement that is still is still finding fulfillment today in charities that are seeking to end all forms of human trafficking. That was a seed that started a movement that has changed a mindset. And I could go on and on. Foot binding of women in China. A man who found friends with two adults who had learning difficulties and just hung out with them and started to learn, oh, I'm teaching them, but they're also teaching me. Something's mutual here. Something's powerful here. And so started communities of them called the Liash, and they are now a global movement of change the mindset on how we relate to people who are maybe more vulnerable and different to ourselves. And then there are people after who are setting up village after village after village of safe, clean housing and education for the 50 million orphans in Africa. It's just happening. It's like this virus of goodness just covering that incredible sadness. Now, there are many, many people who have no faith at all or other religions who care very deeply about these issues and sometimes care more than people who call themselves Christians. So what's the difference? Why is the local church the hope of the world? Recently, a sociology study was done, and £50 million spent on what is the common thread that links thriving, prosperous communities. And they looked into all sorts of research, spent a lot of money and took a lot of time. And they came to one surprising fact, which they didn't think they would come to. And it was this element that a generation previously, there were Protestant conversionary missionaries telling people about Jesus. And within a generation, the fruit were schools and hospitals and caring, prosperous communities, people able to have a job and function and sustain relationships and be contributors. We carry a message that is completely unique. And it is a message that it is a person who reaches the parts that no one else and nothing else can reach. On the one hand, those bits in us, those seasons in our life when life is so relentless, there's so much pressure, or we look at our history and there was so much abuse and violation, or there's just such impossible situation currently or in the past that no self-medication can help. No amount of Netflix binging or or legal or illegal substances or buying or selling or all these things that we can do just can't reach that bit of us to heal and redeem and restore. But he can, Jesus can. In his death and resurrection on the cross, he met us in that deep place and restores and heals. He relieves pressure when the situation, like a chronic health issue or financial difficulty or relational difficulty, just feels beyond our capacity to endure. He can meet us there, and nothing and no one else can. But also, and what is more scandalous and actually incredibly offensive, is he meets us at the other end of the spectrum of the human condition. He meets the perpetrators of social evils. He meets the traffickers and the corrupt bankers and politicians. He meets the people who make their lives work out of the exploitation of the human condition and our propensity for addiction, whether it's the food industry and it's legal, or whether it's highly entrepreneurial and it's illegal. He meets us there with lives that have been devastated. And I know that because history talks about that. Jesus calls himself a friend of sinners, and we like that idea, don't we? We hung out with people. They were trendy. They sinned. Oh, my gosh. But he didn't, actually, because they were the ethical, mainstream, religious, acceptable people. He hung out with people that people hated, that had shame, that I wouldn't want to be associated with. And he said this because he said, it's not the healthy who need the doctor, but the sick. In one sentence, he always did this. He both exposed the evil and sick ways of actions and lifestyle, but also said, I have the full and creative solution for this. And in his death and resurrection, he didn't just offer a medication to suppress the worst excesses of the human condition or a rehabilitation program to help it. He actually gave us new hearts. He took out the old, corrupted, broken heart, and he gave us a heart. And out of that heart could flow, or would only flow, actually, because it was his heart, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and faithfulness and self-control. And Paul says about that, there is no law. You can never go wrong. You never violate anyone. It's fullness. That's exactly how we're designed to live. And he alone offers that. No one else, nothing else, can actually give us the heart condition required to live a life that invests and serves and stewards ourselves and everyone else well. How do I know that it's possible for that to happen to even the worst perpetrators of evil? Because Jesus's followers were full of them, and history is full of them. So Matthew and Zacchaeus, we like those guys, don't we? Matthew wrote the gospel, must be good. Zacchaeus, he was up a tree, he was short, you know, might have had issues, I don't know. But Matthew, they were called tax collectors, which were the equivalent of corrupt bankers of the age. They were just utterly heartless and greedy. So they had these brutal occupying Romans. They would get the taxes for them, rob their poorer neighbours and communities of excess, just totally for their own gain, and completely get away with it. They were absolutely hated, and rightly so. They were horrendous and treated people really badly. They met Jesus, and there was something about what he did and what he offered that they just left it all and followed him and became the building blocks of this movement. And then we have Paul, amazing guy, such vision. He turned what could have been seen as a Jewish sect in unknown Palestine into the major dominant faith of the Roman Empire. In fact, after 300 years, actually surpassing it. He was a zealous fundamentalist bigot. He killed people and condoned the death of people who violated his own religious sensibilities. Again, the building block of this movement that changes the world. Closer to home, we have this incredible guy, John Wesley. He would preach to coal miners very close to where we are now, and they had blackened faces from their coal, and tears would just weep. They would just move the coal away as they would hear God's love for them and his invitation of forgiveness. Domestic violence, alcoholism, all sorts of social issues went right down in a generation. And in one generation, this prolific, educated, industrialized middle class started to emerge. And the history books say it was probably because of that social change that we didn't have a revolution like the French Revolution. He gave his 5 loaves and 2 fishes. He poured out his life. But the fruit we are still reaping. And many, many people I know, many gifted people in different parts of culture, leaders of society, can trace back their roots to that Methodist movement under Wesley. There was a time in his life, though, that he went to America and he came back and he self-confessed failure. And then even closer to home, we have two other examples. We have John Newton, who famously wrote Amazing Grace. We still sing about today and think, isn't that a lovely song? But he was a slave trader, and he was responsible for tens of thousands of enslaved Africans suffering incredible brutality and death until he met Jesus, and Jesus healed him and changed him, and he became part of the abolition movement. George Muller oversaw the care of tens of thousands of orphans. And by faith and prayer alone, he raised £100 million in today's money. But before he met Jesus, he was a gambler and an ex-offender. Just love this gospel. I just love it. There's a massive global movement to end human trafficking, and rightly so. And there's this little pilot model of men, and it's not only men, who have been involved in trafficking or porn or whatever, who are just meeting. They're meeting women, children who have been in that industry, and they're hearing their stories and they're talking to them. And they're breaking down and they're changing, because there's something about facing the humanity of what you're doing and all your defences and lines of argument that justify your addictive behaviour and compulsive fall away. And then the grace of God meets you in that place and you can change and not have to be like that anymore. The success rate of this pilot kind of moves, this pilot programs, is 90%. 90% of men come away. It's very small, but it will grow, saying, I don't want anything to do with that again. It's just the grace of God. He just invites people to change, and they can be changed forever. So we are here. We're a local church, and we host a message, and that message is the person of Jesus Christ. He can do what no one else and nothing else has ever been able to do, and he can reach the parts in us that no one and nothing else can reach. And we have four dreams, which we're looking at this week, this term, which help show our part in playing that extraordinary role. Can anyone tell me what the four dreams are? Place kids love to be part of. We're going to be looking at that today. That's great. Yep. A prayer centre, place of ongoing prayer. Helen will be looking at that next week. Sorry, the 8th of October. Place a family for those on the margins of society. And a centre of hope in the community. So last week, Chris spoke of what it is to be family for those on the margins of society. I really recommend you listen to that if you weren't here. It was on the rich man of Lazarus, and it was phenomenal. I learned and saw some things I've never seen before. So this week, we're going to look at children, and I'm going to read some of Jesus' teaching from Matthew 18. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it will be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to the person through whom they come. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go to look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that didn't wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish. So I'll give you a little context. And we can see this playing out still now. There's a Jewish context and a Greco-Roman context. So the Jewish context, if you like, the Torah, stories about God, truths, experiences of him, were celebrated as families. All the feasts were to be celebrated and everyone was to come together. From as soon as you were born, you were part of the Passover feast, for example, which has been going on now for over 3,500 years. Revivals often included children hearing and weeping or rejoicing at the word of God being read out historically under Ezra and Nehemiah. Proverbs and in the Torah, Deuteronomy, wise parents were encouraged, if not commanded and instructed, to pass to their children stories of who they were. It was a very important aspect of Jewish culture and still is today, that children, that their story and history and identity is fully embedded from childhood. They're immersed. They are discipled in the ways of their identity and their beliefs simply through being present In so many ways, God reveals himself. Their children pass through the Red Sea, and we can see Jesus fulfilling that. Children were experienced in part of, integral part of, for example, the feeding of the 5,000. This was completely countercultural for Greco-Romans. They were completely the opposite end of the spectrum. Understandably, because of things like mortality rate, it was a very different culture then. Between 0 and 5, children were often not named. And that is understandable, because the survival rates are about 50% even now in parts of the world. But a child would never be referred to as great. So when Jesus starts to link children with great, people would have been thinking Caesar was great or Herod was great. To change the mindset, actually, to be great means to change and become like a child, was extremely challenging to his hearers, even Jewish hearers. In the ancient, this is John Ortberg, status-ordered world, children were at the bottom of the ladder. In both Greek and Latin, they meant the word was not speaking because they were not capable of reason. They didn't have the dignity of reason. Therefore, they were shunned and not taken seriously or stewarded in any way. Plato writes about the mob of motley appetites, pains and pleasures that one finds in children, along with slaves and women. Children were noted for fear, weakness and helplessness. To be a child was to be dependent, defenseless, fragile, vulnerable and at risk. What we would define as gross violation and abuse of children now was completely normal, accepted and celebrated in Greco-Roman culture. So when Jesus talks about people causing little ones to stumble, he wasn't saying something that's great, justice will be done. He was saying something that would have been utterly shocking. That actually justice is done to perpetrators of those violations to children. It would have been totally out of their radar. I love Jesus. He just sows these seeds. And it takes a few centuries for humanity to sort of catch up with his vision. Paul takes this to the Greco-Roman world. And interestingly, in his letter to Timothy, who was commanded to bring oversight and alignment to the Ephesian church, very Greco-Roman culture, Ephesus, he says, bringing up children, he puts that in the category of good deeds, along with other highly applauded charitable works. He raised the status not only of children, but caring for children. And you see this tussle, this tension in humanity between the Jewish approach, which is the spirit of the Torah, is children are immersed, they're stewarded, they're invested in, they're seen as the future, they're believed in. And the kind of Greco-Roman approach, which is at best an inconvenience, at worst, vehicles for exploitation and abuse. So in this teaching, there are three very simple things we can take. Firstly, to be great looks different now. It looks like serving the last, the least, and the lost, being a servant of all. And in this case, children. Secondly, every time we serve the most vulnerable, including a child, the dignity of that act is elevated to that of serving Jesus himself. And when Jesus came incarnate as a baby, he was turning the world upside down just by that very act of saying baby has as much dignity as anyone else. And thirdly, every violation or act of abuse or abdication towards children will be taken extremely seriously and brought to justice. That is seen, God sees it, and humanly or spiritually, depending on how it works, it will be brought to justice. As we've said earlier, that justice could be in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ for those who put their hope in that incredible grace that he offers to everyone, whatever they've done. But if they refuse that justice, they will have to pay it themselves. Now, forgive me a moment. I just like to dream. I have this dream. I just suddenly thought about 90,000 men and 5,000 women in prison. I just thought, in this country, I thought, what a waste of time and money. Make prisons history. Wouldn't that be amazing if it was just part of our past? It was a thing in the progression of humanity that we went through and then we came out the other side and we didn't do that anymore. And so I started thinking about this, as you do. So putting someone in prison costs £65,000. Keeping them in per year costs £40,000. Even if you don't care about anyone, that's quite a lot for the taxpayer to fund. Now, research shows that we can gauge from the age of about 2 the likelihood of boys going into prison and girls, but it's 10 times more likely to be boys. We also know that 1 hour of just hanging out in a family with totally as a friend, no a posture of non-judgment, obviously, just being there, being present, 1 hour a week can take children off the at-risk register at school. Leave that home and stop coming, within 2 weeks they're back on the at-risk register. And that if you have a sentence of under a year, you have a 60% chance of reoffending, 60% likelihood of reoffending. There are 50,000 children in care in this country. And my little dream was there are 50,000 church communities just like us. Maybe not just like us, but 50,000 of us. If every church community took 2 men or women who'd been in prison and said, your family, mum, dad, brother, sister, your family, and if they took, just supported one person going into a family once a week to hang out with a toddler every week of the year for the next 20 years to see them through to adulthood, could have holidays and sick leave, maybe, but every week of the year. And took in one child from the foster care system. We supported one family doing that. So it's not everyone doing it. It's one family in each church community do that. We could clear the prison system and the foster care system. Of course, there would be people who would still choose to go whatever, even if family and love and the power of God and the grace of God is offered. But 90%... of men involved in these model, prototype models on the sex industry, 90% who see what they're really doing and know they can change, and are given the gospel, they change. The outcomes of just family and love and the good news of Jesus are so high. It's so robust. We think orphanages are a thing of the past in this country. They weren't. They became it over time. We can make things that are current a thing of the past. They have their season, but then we move on and we do it in a more progressive way. I would love just people just don't have to have that trajectory. Just love that. I love that at 2, they don't have to have that trajectory. That, to me, is one of the grossest injustices this nation faces. So the local church is the hope of the world. It's just not a nice idea. It's a robust, creative solution to some of the most challenging problems we face. So where do we begin? I think it's seeds. It's seeds, isn't it? We just sow a seed. We do the thing. Silas and Andy saw a guy called Andy. Just couldn't really do alpha in a church, but actually wanted to know Jesus, and hope started. It was like a seed. It was like, how can we facilitate him coming to know Jesus? We ask the Lord, what's the seed we sow? And that seed is our life. He doesn't make any bones about that. Unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it cannot bear fruit. We give our life, our 5 loaves, our 2 fishes, our thing, our reorientation, and we say, this is the thing. This is the thing I die for. This is the thing I live for. We've got a fabulous Christ-centered recovery group here run by Christy. We are transitioning, as many of you know, from life groups to life boats. Life groups have an up and an in, and life boats have an up and an in and out, as per this beautiful drape. One of them is Celebrate Recovery. If anyone wants to get involved in that, it's just walking through being freed from life-controlling issues on a Monday night in the crypt, through connecting with the Beatitudes. Talk to Chris or Christy if you want to be part of that. Listen to it last week online. It's very, very moving. Then we also have night shelter season coming up again in the spring term. winter, so January, for 3 months now. We've got 14 churches in this city going to provide for 3 months now, and we do 6 weeks. Talk to Aaron if you want to be involved in that at all. But wouldn't it be amazing as if within a generation there just wasn't this need because we invested in children? This is, it's just, to me, it's like a false economy why we don't invest in children. So we invest in children, then the need in a generation won't be there. People won't need to recover because they didn't get there in the first place. There was love and stewardship and everything people needed. I'm not saying people don't have choices. Of course, everyone has choices. But I'm saying so much damage limitation can happen through just pouring out love to young children. So there are 5 ways to start being part of a church here that kids love to be part of. There's a weekly Hope Rota, which is just a lovely, I've been on it for 9 years, at least once a month. And it's just something really beautiful about connecting every week, once a month, about 10 hours a year, because it's 10 times for 10 months of the year. But connecting with children and seeing them grow up, pouring into them, stewarding their faith in Jesus, sharing that love and adventure that the spirit of the Jewish Torah talks about. Then there's a Little Stars team. We now connect with 30 or 40 families each year, the local community and beyond. And we've had a French Alpha out of that, and also just started, now Freddie can go to school, a dream I've had for a while, which is anyone who wants to know Jesus more and get more prayer and support can come to our house after Little Stars in the morning, and we can have lunch together, and we've just started that, and that was really exciting. I'd love to have more Hopers there. We have a fantastic team from the community, and two from Hope, and I'd love to have 2 more, because I think it's a really good balance. A local mum, friend of mine in the community, a Muslim, said to me a year or two ago, what you need to put on is a summer holiday club here at Hope. And I was like, yeah, I've been thinking about that. Funny you should say that. Jesus has just spoken to you. Thanks. Through you to me. And so when a friend of ours who's running one, who is a teacher at Hotwells Primary, was running one at Fishponds Baptist this summer, I took Jemima, Benj and Freddie. We went there to taste, could we do a holiday club here? They have 90% from their local community who don't go to their church on a Sunday. 90%. They're all given the opportunity to give their life to Jesus, and many of them do. And then they follow on with an after-school club. So I would love to run one here. But I can't do it unless I have a team of 10 people, because I don't want to. I just want it to be fun, and I want it to be connected, and I want it to be community. Out of that, we'd love to launch an after-school club that's free here if anyone wants to join in that. And then by September 2019, launch a youth club to recover the roots here. There was a Friday night youth club that had to be disbanded because of resources, but one for many, many years. But to do that Friday night, I hope one. There's one comment on what true religion is in the New Testament. One comment. The word religion is I think, only used this once. It is, the religion that's pure and faultless is this, to look after widows and orphans in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. There's a call to abstain from the escapism and engage with the pain and suffering and vulnerability. Most of our lives we spend abstaining from the suffering and pain and the vulnerability and the hard work of loving well. We spend a lot of our lives trying to organise how we can escape that, and we engage with things that we try and self-medicate through. But what God calls us to is the opposite. Abstain from the self-medication. Just wean ourselves off it. It's not going to heal us. It's not going to help us. Engage with the coal face of humanity, and wow, do we get healed. It's called a win-win. With God, it's always a win-win. That's the reward. That's the place of healing and wholeness. When we go where he goes, I cannot advocate it enough. It's the most healing, transformational journey of my life, is to serve the last, the least, and the lost in the ways he's called me to, personally. The local church, there's nothing like her. She is the hope of the world, and she, because she hosts this message of Jesus, can reach the parts that nothing and no one else can reach.